Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I feel stupid and contagious, but here we are now, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. My name is Marcus Speller and Jim Campbell's here.
Hello, 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 hello.
And Luke Moore's here.
I'm an albino.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Yeah, we're here. We are here. My goodness. A mosquito, you say? Nonsense. Right then. Arsenal will be playing Sutton United on an artificial 3G pitch in the FA Cup. That's tonight. So It hasn't happened. I mean, to be honest with you, it could be the greatest upset in recent times in the FA Cup.
Nothing weird ever happens just after we've recorded a show, does it? So I'm sure it'll be a routine win for Arsenal.
Or it could have been 6-0. But what we do know is Arsene Wenger expressed his concern about the 3G surface, despite it being nice and rubbery-based these days. If it was sand, imagine the injuries for Arsenal.
And them having one at the training ground.
I've been on it. I've actually kicked a couple of balls on that 3G indoor one. What's it called?
London Colney.
London Colney, yeah.
Did you get injured?
Yeah, I didn't get injured, no.
Kick him out into touch, did you?
No, but I think Danny Welbeck can't actually play, can he?
They're not taking a risk, are they?
Yeah. So, I mean, once it gets to the point where players not sure whether they can play on it or not, it's probably not the correct surface.
Yeah. Well, excluding grass, of course, what alternative surface or substance there, I suggest, would you choose to have the game played on, Jim?
What I would have would be a thick layer of green felt. So it looked like a Sabutio table, right? Mm-hmm. But underneath it, a treadmill. On the whole pitch.
Ah.
So, obviously, one team's at a distinct disadvantage, but then when you switch round at half-time, then you gain the advantage. So
basically, if the players stopped moving, they would end up in their own goal.
Yeah. So you've got to keep running. And if you want to get a little speed boost, you've got to change direction. That completely changes the game.
What would Dimitar Berbatov do?
Nothing.
Just sit in the net.
It'd be in the stand, wouldn't it?
So yeah, that's how I do it. Imagine corners as well. You'd have to run on the spot. Everyone would have to run on the spot to defend them.
And you think instinctively that when it's moving in your direction, you'll be happy with that. But if you're a forward, you've got to be offside the whole time and keep going.
Well, yeah, so you've got to keep turning around and running. And
I like it. Very tough.
I also think nobody should know about it until the game kicks off. No.
Anyone who's seen me play will know that it looked like the treble was going in the opposite direction I wanted most of the time.
But the thing is, though, that as you say, the strikers to stay on side would have to work, but the defenders to stay in a position would have to work as well.
Exactly.
Because they would get dragged a very high line indeed.
They should train like that, and it would make the game look really easy.
Yeah, the game would be, just absolutely easy, wouldn't it? Yeah, imagine the state of it by the end. They'd all be completely exhausted, but for that reason, there'd be loads of goals.
You need more substitutes.
You could do some amazing slide tackles as well. Look, that Sol Campbell one for England that time.
The never-ending slide tackle.
Yeah. Maybe that's what happened.
It was what
who knows. How long would it take you to work that out?
Yeah.
You know, if nobody knew.
I don't think it'll take me long, Jim. The ground is clearly moving. It'll take me less than a second.
I think it all sounds like virtual insanity to me.
Yes, it does.
Luke, what have you got?
This question reminded me of a series of dreams I used to have about when I was a teenager.
Oh, bloody hell.
Not those type of dreams.
But funny, when you say that, for some reason I just thought, thank goodness Pete's not here.
No, no one wants to hear about other people's dreams. I understand that. So I'll keep this mercifully brief. I used to have a dream quite a lot about playing for Portsmouth, obviously the team I support as a kid. But the game would take place in like a high street or like a supermarket.
Oh, okay,
it'd be really odd. And that would be the way I'd know I wasn't playing for the team in the way that I thought. But anyway, that aside, I'd also obviously like to see some of the top pros now playing those FA Cup pitches of the 70s. That'd be amazing because I don't know what that surface is, but it isn't grass.
No.
but what I would actually like to see is a top level game played on a huge bed of £50 notes, along with mobile phones, tablets, and laptops just chucked all over the pitch at random points. It's a great like, sort of visual indicator of what the game is all about in 2017.
Nice.
I mean, you can imagine like Marouane Fellaini trying to, you know, strike a ball and accidentally like smashing his foot on like an iPad 4 and breaking a metatarsal or something like that.
So Fellaini would be really handy because you'd need to play the ball in the air.
Yeah, true.
You'd have the older players just stuffing money into their shorts every time they went down. Career's coming to an end. Got to make the most of it you can.
If it's Sutton Viatal.
At least Chinese notes.
All those Sutton air players would just be lovely. Just take the money. Take the money.
Nice. I like it. I thought to myself, I would like to see the game played maybe in an airport. Just a la that Brazil World Cup
advert. Oh, nice.
98?
I think it was 98, because if they can do that in an airport, then we should see more football played in an airport, quite frankly.
I agree.
But I settled on treacle.
Oh, yeah.
To see what it's really like.
Wading
Maybe
through treacle.
Maybe it's not that bad.
It'd be just like watching Teddy Sheringham play.
or Yaya Toure. Maybe he'd excel.
Yeah.
Maybe he'd be the fittest one on treacle.
I think it would make him slower.
Oh dear!
I don't know how you feel about this, Marcus. Unless you sort of I've grossly misread the situation. I don't think slower players are going to benefit from playing in treacle.
Are they not used to it already?
Could you slide around on it though?
No,
I guess not. Probably not.
No,
you're depends how thick the treacle is.
Do yourself a damage. Then.
I think Jim's got the points. Though. I like the treadmill idea.
Thanks, Jim. I had a little bonus one as well. Barefoot on bubble wrap. Be nice, wouldn't it?
That'd be very satisfying. Yeah. I'd like to play. I'd never like to watch that, but I'd like to play on that. That'd be brilliant. It'd sound like a machine gun going off.
Yeah.
Like that, when you're running down the wing. Imagine like you'd
depends who's running.
You'd be able to definitively tell who the fastest player is by the sort of rapid machine gun popping of the bubbles. Like Carl Walker down the ring.
That's the surface for a slide tackle.
Yeah, it sure is.
But you've only got one run and then they're all popped.
But if Teddy Sheringham was running, it'll be...
Why are you having a go at Sheringham?
I love Sheringham. He's a great player.
Doesn't sound like you do.
Very slow.
A lot of digs, a lot of Sheringham.
He's retired, isn't he?
Yes, yeah.
Well, there you go. It's going to be slow, isn't it?
You could have picked any retired player.
Sorry, are you suggesting he might have got faster since he retired?
No, I'm saying that he'd probably still do a job.
I think you probably could.
Yeah.
What I would add, by the way, is that obviously I think you change the bubble wrap at half time. Be on a big sheet.
I'd like to see it magically reappearing bubble wrap. So it pops, then it comes up again.
Why not? Yeah, I mean, this is never going
to
happen.
You're filling in for Pete. You want to play football on £50 notes and iPads, and then you want magically reappearing bubble wrap.
And you hate a beloved national treasure for no reason.
I'm nothing but a Pete understudy.
A product of your own football ramble environment.
And I've talked about playing football in a dream in a supermarket. That is the most daunting thing I've said today. I'll have to try and rein it in. Sorry.
Oh, dear. Let's quickly go to the FA Cup to bring ourselves back down to earth. Or have we, though? Because the first time in 103 years a non-league side have reached the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. It's, of course, Lincoln City.
It's incredible.
I mean, you're saying you're bringing it back to reality. I mean, there's nothing really that sort of realistic about what happened at Turf Moor.
Well, that's what I mean, Luke. Yeah. That's what I mean, you know. And it gets more ridiculous when Sean Raggett... Is it Raggett? He scored the goal in the Italian paper, which many of you will have heard of, Gazzetta dello Sport. They included him in their team of the week, along with like the likes of Jovetic, Harry Kane, Gamero and Isco.
Right as well.
Just, clean sheet, a tough place to go, and got the winner.
So that represents all of our boyhood dreams,
absolutely,
doing that sort of stuff. So fair enough, that's a great addition. But yeah, I mean, they carved them open in the fifth minute as well. They had a go where they could. Obviously, it was largely just backs to the wall, just kick it into touch, get rid whenever you can. But I loved how committed they were to that. It was I've never seen such little nonsense.
Danny Cowley, the manager, said it's quite a telling quote. He was on Match of the Day that evening, wasn't he?
He was,
and he said, "I told the players ahead of the game they'd have to enjoy defending." Mm. And it's a nice quote because not enough teams buy into that. I don't think, especially at the top level.
And when away to Burnley. It was funny because when we were talking about it, saying, you know, this is one of the worst draws they could get.
Mm.
Yes, but actually, if you stick in there, Burnley are not known for carving teams open, really. And
it was confusing for Burnley because they weren't properly sure of their role, I don't think.
Yeah, exactly, which is something I think I suggested, that Burnley are normally playing on the back foot and like to play on the break. Mm. Obviously, at home, that's not always been the case. But against Lincoln, when Burnley are overwhelming favourites, how do you then approach the game? It's a bit of a strange one.
You can't be a Premier League team and let a non-league team come onto you. You cannot do it. Not acceptable, is it? Not acceptable. But the goal was such an FA Cup goal.
It was
like really scruffy, like difficult to see at first if it was over the line or not. And then it was one centre-back heading a ball to another centre-back who headed it in. And he had so much time and space. I don't know what they were doing.
He really did, didn't he? And he pushed his teammate out the way. They were queuing up.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And also, as well, just a little word on goal line technology. I don't think anybody really opposes goal line technology. They might have opposed more technology, but certainly that one.
Yeah.
But imagine, though, if that was a few years ago and goal line technology wasn't here and that goal hadn't have stood.
Crazy.
You see what I mean?
It was one of those calls where you can see how that would have been missed without it.
Yeah.
But Burnley had four players on the line as well. Four players on the goal.
And the keeper got two hands. I mean, it was already in, of course. Yeah. So it's all
immaterial. They just forced that in, didn't they?
Yeah.
Did you see Danny Cowley again on Match of the Day afterwards about the goal? He said they were meant to run box, but they ran one we call Carnage. Yeah. I love that. They've named all these.
He seems like a really sort of interesting guy. I think he talks a lot about breaking the game down to 15-minute chunks as well and having like little mini games in the middle of the game and trying to sort of, because he said something really interesting, or I thought was interesting anyway. He said, if I tell the players they've got to get past the Premier League team in across 90 minutes, it seems in their mind like quite a daunting task.
Yeah.
If you break it down, it's almost like when you go and do a run, like a long distance race or whatever. Mm-hmm. You don't, I did a 10 mile run a while back. There you go.
To be fair, you didn't do it.
No, I did, yeah. But you don't. But you don't go into that going, right, I'm going to run 10 miles. You're like, right, let's get to the next mile marker. Let's get to the next mile marker.
And then you make it up after about three.
Jimmy's and you get on the bus.
It was a full marathon and he only did 10 miles.
They're called Snickers now.
Indeed, they are. Yeah, very true. There's a joke in there somewhere. When you hear the Cowley brothers talking about those kind of tactics, you realise this sort of more intricacies. You know, some managers say, oh, well, you just go out and enjoy yourself and play. And obviously, they're just saying that. But it is quite remarkable. And they only joined Lincoln City in May 2016. They're currently on course for promotion. And obviously in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup. Those two, they're hot football property.
They're at Braintree Town before that. And I think they were both teachers as well at the same time. And they moved to Lincoln and started working as full-time coaches. But what about Joey Barton getting right amongst it?
God. He was a bit silly, wasn't he?
It was embarrassing, wasn't it?
He should have got sent off and then he tried to get Matt Reed sent off. I mean, there was a little bit of contact, but obviously what Reed was doing was trying to highlight the incident. But Barton,
he's taken advantage of that little bit of contact, isn't he?
He's just essentially buying into, in that instance, he was, I don't hugely dislike Barton generally.
No.
I think he's probably was at his pomp a little bit of an underrated midfield player. But there's no real excuse for his behaviour in that game against Lincoln, because it's not as though he needed to do whatever he needed to do to get an edge against Lincoln. I mean, if they're playing, you know, if Burnley somehow qualify for the Europa League or something, and they were playing a team that had come down from the Champions League, like a Sevilla or someone like that, as an example, and he was playing against some really good quality midfield players, you could understand to an extent why he was trying to get an edge, while being niggly and getting amongst them. But he doesn't need to do that. And in my assessment of it is that against Lincoln, in my assessment of it is that, you know, he knows the game's on TV. He's thinking, right, I want to give him the version of Joey Barton on TV that everyone wants to see.
Yeah.
And he just becomes like a parody of himself. You know, it was really, really actually quite depressing to watch.
Do you think he'll get some retrospective punishment for the punch?
It wasn't really a punch, was it?
It was still
hand to the face type thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was still bad, though. So you shouldn't do that.
Mm.
They're out of the cup, Jim. Don't worry about it.
Mm. Yeah.
Matt Reed wasn't having any of it. He was an absolute weapon, as we expected. Everybody thought he would.
He's a weapon of Matt destruction.
Very good. The amount of headers and, like, near elbows to the face and pushing defenders around and so on.
Yeah.
You can imagine him terrorising that Sutton United back line in the quarterfinal.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
We don't know. You know what, though? We tweeted about this at the weekend. But, like, you know, if the arsepocalypse continues,
yes,
as we said,
yes,
it's starting against Lincoln in the quarterfinal. Guaranteed. Mad. A non-league team in the semi.
Mad.
I don't know.
Part of me sort of wants it.
Yeah.
Well,
a large part of me wants it.
Well, it'll all have been done and dusted by the time it's hearing this, of course.
It's an ideal draw for Lincoln. I'll tell you why. Because, Mark, yeah, you touched on it, and we talked about it in the past. The three games they've played since the third round proper now, they've had Ipswich, on paper, that was an annoying draw because you'd expect them to get beat and yes, it wouldn't be on TV or anything like that, but obviously it didn't work out like that. Brighton again, not a glamorous tie with respect to Brighton. They would have been expected to be knocked out, but they won it. Mm-hmm. And the same again with Burnley. Now at least they've got a realistic chance of getting to the semi-final, or more likely, a big game at the Emirates, which is absolutely what they deserve. They've been so impressive, so good, so great to watch. I'd love to see them play. So I don't think it's going to happen, but I'll very much enjoy seeing them play at the Emirates.
Indeed. There was another cup set, if you can call it that. Millwall beat Leicester, of course. 10-man Millwall. I mean, Leicester,
I think you can call it that. I think, you know, the non-league teams are disguising Millwall's run. It's incredible.
It was more the Premier League team.
It was more. Yeah, I mean, of course you're right, Jim, but it was more the comment about Leicester City, really.
Right. I see.
It was a lovely last-minute goal. The fullback getting up there, and the way he shuffled his feet and slotted it in, he couldn't believe his luck.
I loved the post-match interview with him. The interviewer went, "What are you doing up there in the last minute?" He was like, "Trying to score a goal."
Yeah.
In which case, bloody well done.
Yeah. Great job. Yeah. Well, you succeeded, Sam. Yeah. And you're in the next round of the cup.
There's a big row in this one as well, isn't there?
Yeah,
it was. Very rowy.
The guy who Cooper, who got sent off for a second yellow, the row was around his first yellow, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Piling in on Ron Robert Zila. Mm. But, I mean, I know the incredulity about Leicester's sort of poor level of performance this season has known no bounds.
Yeah.
I won't go into it too much depth because I'm sure it's pretty boring for most people. But you mean to tell me that Leicester can have a huge amount of possession, over two-thirds of possession, against a team from the league below them who are down to 10 men?
Two leagues below them.
And still not do anything.
Apparently,
not know what to do.
Yeah, well, he rotated heavily, didn't he? So that also doesn't work.
I said, bring in Okazaki. He missed the glorious chance.
Yeah. Kapuchka as well. Like, he looked fantastic in the Euros.
Mm.
He's barely kicked a ball for them, as far as I know. Yeah, it's a shame.
So lacklustre. 10 changes, of course, made by Ranieri. But Millwall doing what they love to do down at the Den against bigger sides.
Mixing it up.
I felt sorry for Ranieri because he was sort of grasping at straws. He was like, we're a better team than Leicester, other than Millwall, but they deserve to go through.
Yeah. He just sounds exasperated, though, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's like he's right. Everything he's tried has failed. It's almost the opposite of last season. It's not boring there, is it?
No.
A couple of seasons ago, they had that blistering promotion. Then they have that incredible, like, dramatic, you know, season when they stay up. Mm-hmm. At the death, and then they win the league against all the odds, and now this. Yes. It's incredible.
Well, still in the Champions League, lest we forget
that. I mean, I'm not an expert in Leicester at all, but a couple of the names they played in that game against Millwall, I'd never heard of them, and I was thinking, is he playing people who aren't even footballers now?
Getting fans in.
Yeah, maybe, can't be any worse.
Maybe that's it, yeah. You'd imagine they'll struggle big time against Sevilla. I mean, under Sampaoli, Sevilla love to press, they love to harry, and they've got a lot of quality as well. And it could. I really hope it's not embarrassing.
I don't think Cooper could have had any complaints about sending off either, could he? Really, he is two straight yellow.
It
really
was a bit. The second one was a bit tasty.
John Hartson didn't like the first one because if you're John Hartson, it's impossible to foul a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
You could kick his head off.
No, it's fine. John Hartson's one of those guys who thinks that everyone's as big and tough as him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And John Hartson also was a little bit out of order to the Cowley brothers in Match of the Day. I don't know if you guys saw it. For those who haven't seen it, both the Cowley brothers at Lincoln, Danny and his brother, got invited on to Match of the Day to chat about the game.
In their tracksuits.
Yeah, and it was quite a nice touch.
Yeah, it was great.
But the thing was, if it was not handled very carefully, it would have seemed really patronising. And for the first sort of 95% of the interview, it was actually handled nicely and it was interesting to speak to them. And they were clearly serious guys, probably performing or getting Lincoln to perform above their level, but clearly are going to have a future in the game. And at the very end of the interview, John Hartson unnecessarily went, "Oi, Jorge Mendes will be on the phone about you two. Super agent. You have a super agent next." And it's like, why are you being so patronising?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's that bad.
I'm not sure.
I'm against it. He's mugged them off there.
I don't know if he has. I think it's all...
Why are you sticking up for him?
I'm not sticking up for him.
Why are you sticking the boot into everyone?
Just Hartson. Just Hartson and Sheringham.
Really,
it's a great upfront combo.
I don't know. There's no pace.
If they come around my house because they're annoyed, one of them's going to set it up. The other one's going to smash me in the face.
if you're wondering what Pete thinks of Lincoln getting to the quarterfinals, he shrugged his shoulder and said, "Well, they'll probably go out in the next round. No, so what's the point?"
He actually said on email, "It's the minimum I expect."
Not an achievement.
Yeah. Although the FA Cup is pointless.
But Millwall, of course, have got Spurs away in the next round.
Well, I thought you were going to go speaking of pointless. Richard Osman was in the crowd at the Fulham game.
I didn't know he was.
Set you up for that.
He's a big Fulham fan.
He is, yeah.
I am aware of that.
He's literally a big Fulham fan.
He is. Huge. I've actually bumped into him in real life. He is massive.
I've met him too.
I'm 6'3" in my shoes, and he towered over me.
In my shoes.
But he said something quite funny. He said, half time, he said, "I'm really annoyed that Spurs haven't disrespected this competition."
He's quite funny, isn't he? Harry Kane, hat trick.
Yeah. You know what? Something Harry Kane does so well is he scores a lot of difficult goals that initially look really simple.
Yeah.
The first two goals are an example of this. He's just on stuff so quickly. Always makes the right decision with his finishing.
I think at the top of his game, he is a complete forward.
Yeah.
And I think he scores every type of goal. He works really hard. If you look at his career development, he wasn't seen. He was obviously going to be a prospect, but he was farmed out on loan quite a lot. He didn't score a huge amount of goals on loan when he was at Millwall, and I think he was at Leicester for a bit as well. Didn't score huge amounts of goals. His dedication to how hard he's worked to improve his game is unbelievable. And I think you would say to any young forward that do what Harry Kane does. He never stops all day. He scores every type of goal. And you know he scores every type of goal because he probably works really hard on his weaknesses as well to make himself better at the things he wasn't perhaps as good as he should be at. Fantastic performance. It was a complete forward performance. Fine, they're playing against Fulham, who are a division below them. But Fulham aren't a bad team at all.
Yeah, Fulham are doing all right.
I tell you who else played very well. I thought Trippier was excellent. His delivery is fantastic. He must have the best delivery of a non-first choice player in the Premier League. It's no mucking around. I know it was picked up on commentary at the time, but I really wanted to reiterate it. One touch, two touch, bang, a really good whip ball in every single time.
Well, he's come from that Burnley team, isn't he? From a few seasons ago when Burnley had them up. When Dyche had them up the first time, and that, you know, he'd have been doing that all day. You know, so Pochettino has identified a player with a very specific set of skills that can be transferred into his side, and this is just a very canny signing.
Yeah.
So remember it like. It's not as if like there were many eyebrows raised when he signed for them, but it didn't seem the most obvious signing at first, did it? But obviously, you know, that's why he's brought him in. And again, top work from him.
He played every game in the Premier League with Burnley last time.
Yeah, I really hope, not because I'm a Spurs fan, but I really hope Pochettino stays in the Premier League because he is developing players and also, from a selfish point of view, English players as well. I mean, Harry Kane is a good example. The fullbacks, you know, Walk and Rose, not that we were talking about them, we were talking about Trippier, of course.
But you know what, mate? I wouldn't mind if he left.
I know you wouldn't, but just briefly going back to Harry Kane, he slightly reminded me, and I suppose you're talking about the work ethic and his overall team performance and all that kind of stuff. It's like he's the forward equivalent to the midfielder Frank Lampard.
Yeah,
maybe there's a
touch. They're both moving the same sort of at the same sort of pace. They don't look obviously quick, but they can go past players.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, you can be slightly graceful, Kane, actually.
Yeah.
Sometimes, because Lampard was very much so. I mean, it was a comprehensive win for Spurs.
It was a fantastic performance. I mean, it was one of those things where Fulham were a better team than they showed, but Spurs just didn't let them play.
Well, when the Fulham manager, Slavisa Jokanovic, sums it up by saying Spurs, they dominated the whole match.
Yeah.
You know it was comprehensive. I mean, normally managers say, "Oh, well, we gave him a run." He was just like, "Yeah." You can't really deny that. But what's happened, though, reports saying that Spurs might swoop for Ryan Sessegnon, just as I was saying.
Obvious, isn't it?
But, I mean, a lot of clubs have been linked to him, to be fair.
Where's that? Is that rumour just doing the rounds lazily, or has it come from anywhere sort of in particular?
I think it's because there's quite a few clubs, Arsenal and Chelsea as well, looking at him. And obviously Spurs have just been there and... It's in some of the national press, you know.
But Spurs played a fairly strong side as well. I know Wink started, he did okay, and I thought Warm did all right again, and Trippier and Davis were able to understand Trippier particularly. But Alderweireld and Vertonghen both starting was really big for them.
Spurs could do with a trophy because they're not going to win the league this season.
Absolutely. It's a key moment for them to win a trophy under
Pochettino. Yes.
He's reinvented that club, really. And he's obviously moving them in the right direction. But at some point, they do need to get over the line and win a trophy and become... Because we've seen many players in the past, great players, who've said, once you win the first one, you're up and running, you're on your way. And I think Spurs really need that. That's the one thing missing from them at the moment.
Well, City won the FA Cup, didn't they? And that sort of put them on their on the road to where they are now.
Yeah, and obviously in 2014, was it Arsenal won the FA Cup?
Yeah. So that's why we're on the title charge
back
right now.
And that put them on a road as well.
Well, it was the end of the road to Wembley, of course. But Spurs now have gone on a longer trophy-less run than Arsenal did between 2005 and 2014. Their last trophy was back in 2008. Jim, does that give you just an ounce of glee?
Not really, no.
Juan de Ramos, wasn't it? They won the League Cup.
Was it Randy Ramos?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, hey. Mm. They were heroes just for one day. Yeah, so I think if Spurs can actually have a good go at this FA Cup, you look at the draw. I mean, they've got Millwall in the next round. They should be in the semi-final. I know that's slightly disrespectful, blah, 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 but come on. Yeah. Spurs should
step
beat Millwall.
Up from Leicester.
Exactly. It's at the Lane as well, isn't it?
Right, exactly. Mm. So that's a kind draw for them. And as you said, Luke, you get the first trophy. But also as well, just to bring in a bit more belief, because I still think, without going down this road too much, that some Spurs fans, there will be a slight inferiority complex in North London. Not that it's about that. But if they win a trophy and, say, finish second or third, you know, that's wonderful. 2 years in a row.
There's a chance they'll meet each other on the way, Spurs and Arsenal.
Mm.
So who knows?
Who knows? Maybe there won't be at the time of recording.
Yeah, Pochettino, when he was at Southampton, I wouldn't say devalued. That's probably two strong terms to put it in. But he sort of devalued it when he was at Southampton, the FA Cup. They weren't going to win anything else. But they didn't seem to play strong teams. And obviously they were unfortunate last season. And now there's an opportunity for them here. And I think, as I just said earlier, it's the one thing that they really need in this project that Pochettino's got going is to get a trophy to get them up and running.
Very much so. We're going to go quickly to this and then talk more about the FA Cup.
Hi, I'm Dion Dublin. And when I'm not banging my tube, I'm listening to the Football Ramble.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble. Everybody, hello. It's time for emails with Jim Campbell.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's just get right into it.
What you got, Jimmy?
Do you want to sound more enthusiastic than that, Jim?
It's just my voice, mate. You know
okay,
it is.
Fair enough.
So I am beaming in the studio. Hello, Ramblers. Following on from the chat around dad behaviour and being careful what you say at non-league games, it reminded me of a Pickering Town versus Winterton Rangers game I went to a few years ago. The Winterton groundsman was giving the linesman abuse for a solid 30 minutes about perceived poor decisions and was even waving his garden fork at him.
What?
I don't know.
Hang on.
But no, I shall continue. Okay. Don't worry. During a brief respite from the torrent of abuse, the linesman turned around to me and my friend, said, "This will really wind him up," gave us a wink, and then flagged the Winterton player offside when through on goal. Even as a Partizan Pikes fan, the flag player was at least 5 yards onside when the ball was played. Needless to say, the groundsman went ballistic and the linesman trotted off chuckling to himself. Professionalism isn't worth it when you just get expenses paid, it would seem. I haven't bought a book yet, but I probably will. Is it available in bookshops still? Of course it is. Yeah. That's from Alistair Dinnerwell.
What club is this in question?
So it was Pickering Town and Winterton Rangers.
Pickering Town FC, huh? I wonder what level that is.
Yeah, well,
outrageous behaviour.
I'm going to guess that it isn't that high up, given those levels of professionalism.
Playing the Northern Counties East League Premier Division. They're founded in 1888. It's an illustrious old club. It's a grand old lady. He should be ashamed of himself.
Brilliant.
Unbelievable.
Oh, right. We've got some more dad chat if you want it as well.
Yeah, okay.
So, by the way, just for the when he says he's abusing the linesman the whole time, right?
Yeah.
If you're sat at football and someone's doing that, it's rubbish being near that person.
Oh, yeah, of course.
If you're listening, don't do that.
Mm. Yeah, stop it. Let's kick that out of football. Okay, so, hi, guys. I'm a Wolves fan, but my dad supports Blackpool. On my 18th birthday, they played each other. We went to watch, me in the home end, my dad in the away end. After the boys in goal gave me a cracking birthday present, winning 4-0, unheard of under McCarthy, I left the ground and tried to ring my dad to arrange to meet up so we could get the train. He rejected every call and refused to talk to me. I saw him at the station and still his mood had not changed. He sat away from me on the train and drove off from the station without me. So on my 18th birthday, I got ignored by my dad and left at the train station. Needless to say, the mother was not happy with his actions and he was made to pick up me and my mates from town in the early hours of the next morning. All the best, Phil.
Absolutely shocking behaviour.
Terrible dad.
Terrible dad in.
Really bad. Mike Phelan would not be doing that.
No, absolutely not. No. Mike Morgan Phelan would be... he'd be gracious in defeat even, I would think. Right.
Even if he managed the other club.
You know? Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
dear.
We've got another dad one. It's quite long, but I think it's worth it. So here we go.
Dads?
Yeah, come on, I know. Dads. I know. They're letting their sons down all over the place.
We need a positive dad story at one point.
Or a mum story as well.
Yeah. If you've got any mum stories, do let us know. Referencing your recurring theme of embarrassing dads at footy matches, I thought I'd recount one of the worst experiences of my life.
Here we go.
I love these ones.
Yeah.
See, when people say to me, oh, what do you want when you talk about the emails and you complain? This. You start an email off saying, this is the worst experience of my life. I'm all in.
You haven't heard it yet?
I'm Andrew Marr.
Interest peaked. So, I was about 7 years old and my dad had taken me to a midweek game to watch the mighty Chester City, now Chester FC. We were running a bit late and rushing to get in, but as my dad charged towards the turnstile, I noticed something was amiss. Dad, that's for away fans, I helpfully pointed out, only for him to explain, bah, doesn't really matter. Even at that tender age, I knew instinctively that it did, in fact, matter quite a bit. We sat quietly throughout the first half, then at half-time made our way to the refreshment kiosk. While queuing up, a bloke stood just in front of us, was ranting to anyone that had listened about the away side shortcomings. I sensed something was about to happen and started moving slowly away from my dad, who has never been brilliant under pressure.
Years old.
Yeah.
Imagine a 7 year old edging away from your dad because as a 7 year old you think you'll be safer away from your.
No, but imagine a 7 year old fully being across his dad's weaknesses.
Yeah, your dad should be Superman when you're 7.
Yeah, I know,
you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Not good under pressure.
No.
I was right. The fella turned around and asked my dad directly what his opinion was on the matter. I held my breath. How would he play this out? Would he murmur quiet assent, shrug and play dumb? Nope. My dad answered with the immortal words, wouldn't know, mate, we're Chester fans, nodding towards me as he did so to ensure that if he was going down, at least he'd be taking me with him. This is the away end, he growled, to which my dad replied, as he had to me, with an unconcerned shrug, it doesn't really matter. Somehow this was enough to confuse the angry away fan man into silence. He turned around shaking his head and muttering under his breath to some of the other away fans. Needless to say, the rest of that time in the queue, not to mention the following 45 minutes of football, were quite uncomfortable. Can't be sure, but I think we were playing Leighton Orient, whoever it was. They definitely played in red. Fairly sure we lost as well. That's from Joe Curitan-Williams. Joe, I'm sorry that you had such a traumatic experience.
The headline for that email should be, Dad considers using 7-year-old son as human shield.
But I love that, as if he's looking at his son and looking at the guy who's, in his grill, saying, oi, you mess with a bull, you get the horns, all right?
Yeah.
Never been great under pressure.
Oh, dear. That's absolutely stunning, that is. Right, shall we go back to the FA Cup?
Yes.
Huddersfield Town got a very credible draw against Man City in front of a record crowd of just shy of 25,000. It's an unwanted replay for Man City, but what? Would Huddersfield look at this as a missed opportunity?
Maybe, yeah. Given the way the game panned out,
yeah.
It was very tepid, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it was. I mean, Joel Coleman had a great goal, a great game in goal for Huddersfield, of course. But Huddersfield played really well. I mean, Aguero made his first start in 5 matches, didn't really do much. Even when De Bruyne and Sané came on, they made little impact. You know, Huddersfield were well drilled. And I don't know. I think Huddersfield, look, they'll be happy to take Man City, to another game in a sense.
It was a pretty strong side City played.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know they started with Nolito and Delph. But other than that, I mean, it wasn't outrageously different to a Premier League strength side. Mm.
But do you not think, though, when the final whistle's gone and they've held City to a draw and they've not conceded, they had a few chances, a few moments, and you think to yourself, we could have had one of the most famous days in recent years at this club.
Especially given that, I think I'm right in saying, Guardiola's never been knocked out of a cup competition by a lower league side in his whole managerial career. Mm-hmm. So that would have been a real scalp, that.
It would have been, yeah.
Do you think the players just weren't up for the game enough?
Because it didn't seem very lackluster,
didn't it? Yeah,
it's a strange one. I think... For a side like Manchester City, you know, they've got a big game against Monaco coming up in the Champions League. They're fighting to finish in the top four in the Premier League. When you go away to Huddersfield Town, a lot of these players, they've played in the Champions League, they've played a lot of international football. You could forgive them for just switching off a bit and thinking we're playing a side who are a division below us in the FA Cup.
Mm.
That's just human nature.
But you wonder within a game, though, surely at some point you recognise that that's happening and sort of step it up a level to try and get it over the line.
Perhaps, but the amount of times they've probably gone through games like that and they look up front and think, well, there's Aguero, you know, he's dug us out of this before. I don't know, but that's no disrespect to Huddersfield Town. I'm not suggesting that old Man City were just strolling around a pitch and Huddersfield were working really hard, you know.
This Man City team, they have shown themselves to be capable of putting in bad performances.
They look soft.
Yeah, away from home. I mean, they lost 4-0 to Everton. Everton are a better side than Huddersfield. Mm-hmm. We know that. But Huddersfield are in good form. And they've won 5 league games in a row coming into this game. They've got serious intentions about moving to the Premier League next season.
Yeah, Philip Billing was great in the midfield.
I thought they marshalled City well. The reason I'm cutting in this, I don't really want to take anything away from Huddersfield, because they played very, very well.
No, that's fair, and I'm glad you did, because Manchester City look soft at their core, and we've seen this in the Premier League. Teams get at them. We've seen sides get results and nearly get results at the Etihad. If you're Huddersfield Town and you're looking at that game, you just think, get stuck into them. It's the same old thing we often criticise Arsenal for. They look a bit soft and you think, you know, get up them. Now, if Arsenal, it all clicks and you know, they pass and dance around you, they can beat you 3 or 4-0. OK, fine, you know, they're better players than us. But when you're a side and you're playing a better opposition and you think, OK, they are better than us, there's no two ways about it. We're just going to have to get stuck in, because we know that they can be got at. Mm. If we get at them and they're not all clicking, the stars haven't realigned and they're going to start blasting triangles around us, we've got a big chance. And they did.
I know the way I know that Huddersfield play well is because it was a poor game. And who does it suit for it to be a poor game? It suits Huddersfield. If it's a great game end to end, then Huddersfield are going to get beaten. So. More often than not, if you have an end to end game against Man City, you're going to be on the wrong end of a result. The fact that it was, from what I saw, a fairly poor game meant that Huddersfield played in Huddersfield's hands, essentially.
Yeah, and the Huddersfield now, obviously, they've got different players and they've got a different manager to the likes of, you know, even Middlesbrough or Swansea. I know Swansea didn't get a result there, but they were close. But they do have almost, if you like, blueprints of how to go to Man City and set up and frustrate the home side and maybe even get a result. And so Huddersfield will look at that and think, we're still very much in this tie. Mm. And with Manchester City's other commitments, as I say, Gabriel Jesus, of course, is out now. Aguero's back in, but he doesn't look like he needs to get a bit more match practice and so on. Yes, an unfit or a 75% Sergio Aguero is still a worrying prospect for most teams. But I just think the same again for Huddersfield. Get stuck into them.
Yeah, I think it's obviously a bigger ask. It's a much higher mountain to climb at the Etihad. But if they get through that, they're playing Middlesbrough next, and that's not the most daunting of games either.
Sure. But I think Pep Guardiola, though, all kind of nonsense aside, you know, at the Etihad, Pep Guardiola will think to himself, we don't want to lose this game. And it might be their only chance of silverware as well, because they are playing a very, very good Monaco side. We'll come on to them later. So he might be tempted to start the likes of De Bruyne and Sané. And actually, if he drums into his players, oi, come on, heads on. You know, they're professional players. You would expect them to step up at least.
Yeah. They play the replay on week on Tuesday, I think.
So we look forward to it. But they will play Middlesbrough in the next round. And, Oxford United. Gutting.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of pelters on Twitter for this game.
Well, why was that?
Because I said that neither team really scored many. Mm. Which in the league is true, at least.
Well, it is, yeah.
I mean, but I also said it might probably be 5-4 now. I said that, and it was 3-2, so not far off that.
Appleton's men. 2 goals in quick succession, yeah. Jim.
I loved the free kick. It was so casual.
Yes. But when the second one goes in, when you see, you know, Lincoln holding Burnley, I think they were at the time, same with Millwall, with Leicester, you know, you see these results coming in, and then you see Oxford give it the old 1-2, and you think, hang on a bleeding minute here. Yeah.
There's a lot to enjoy about this game, by the way.
Yeah, there was.
The penalty was a beautiful penalty by Leadbitter.
Gusted's
goal was a beauty as well, but then Oxford to get themselves back in the game was a huge effort.
Chris Maguire scored the free kick, had a good game for Oxford United in there.
And we should also spare a thought for James Holland, our Bet of the Week man, who unfortunately, he wanted Middlesbrough to win an under 2.5 goals, so that didn't come in. So he's out of the hot seat now. Mm. So we're looking for a new contestant for Thursday's record for Friday's show. So drop us a line at show@thefootballramble.com, and we'll pick which one of you next are doing the Bet of the Week challenge.
Well, very much so, yes. Yes, Jim.
I was just going to say, there's an interesting stat that was again on Match of the Day, which is that Oxford have won more games in 2017 than Middlesbrough have all season. And I wonder if, you know, just being in the habit of winning...
Yeah, I think that matters hugely.
It closes that gap in quality.
I absolutely agree with that. That's why I mentioned... I completely agree with you. That's why I mentioned the point earlier about Huddersfield. They won 5 in a row. I mean, Man City have been in decent form themselves. But Huddersfield, they're in the habit of winning.
Yeah.
It's like Lincoln. Lincoln, they're in the habit of winning. They're top of the league by whatever. They know what it takes to win. And people who know a lot more about sport and sport and achievement than we do will say to you, winning is a habit. Mm. It's a habit.
And Manchester United are getting in the habit of winning.
That was a lovely, that was a great game. I really enjoyed that game. It was a proper FA Cup game.
It was nice that Blackburn didn't get steamrolled because a lot of people thought they might. Okay, Manchester United made a few changes, but they took the lead through Danny Graham and a lovely one.
It was three very good goals.
Mm.
Really, really good goal.
Even Mourinho applauded it, apparently.
Mm. He did, yeah, I saw that, yeah. I thought Emnes was fantastic. Mm. Absolutely brilliant performance from him. I mean, a friend of mine a while back said to me, and Middlesbrough fans, apologies if this is incorrect, but a friend of mine said, when Emnes is on it and decent, he's decent.
I mean, he's very a energetic
good
player.
and he obviously fancied this with the TV cameras against some big illustrious opposition because he was absolutely superb.
I do know the Middlesbrough fans, some of them used to chant to that little bit of 500 Miles by the Proclaimers, Marvin Emnes, Marvin Emnes.
Okay. I'd love to have heard that yesterday with the Blackburn fans.
But... Yeah, well, they missed a trick there. Other things on their mind, perhaps the owners, maybe.
Indeed.
Rashford got the equaliser, and then Ibrahimovic got the win. It was a bit route one, really.
It was, but the way that Ibrahimovic sort of waited for the ball to be in the right position for him to just smash it home was beautiful. And actually, Rashford's goal as well, he did so well to not take a touch on that. He just let the ball run in the direction it was going, and he used its natural path to take it into the position he could steer it around the goalkeeper. And that was so mature.
It was.
I thought Zlatan's goal was like route one football elevator. It's like high art.
He's just
so unhurried. Everything's in slow motion. Yeah, he just has a look, knows the defender's coming in, has another look, one touch in the bottom corner. The goalkeeper could have seen him when he was going to do that, but he still couldn't stop him.
Well, he scored a hat-trick against St Etienne, didn't he? Which I saw someone on Twitter call a rubbish hat-trick, which I enjoyed.
Well, I saw a lot of Man United fans were tweeting saying that... He's overrated.
Well, a lot of people have said that, like, when you watch him every week, he should put more chances away. And, like, obviously, you know, they watch their own team closer than we do our teams. But, he has scored 24 goals at 35 years old.
I know.
He's like Cantona, isn't he? He said when he came to Old Trafford he wanted to, you know, take Cantona's place as the king. And he's already got that sort of status there and that sort of, maybe not the status, but he fits that type of mould. They look to him in the same way that,
those players did.
Yeah.
I think that's right with Ibrahimovic when people say he's overrated and whatnot. Yes, okay, in ability he might not get around the pitch, and there might be one or two chances that he could put away actually if you stretch them all out in a big line. But the thing that he brings is some intangible qualities, like his leadership, like the lift he gives players. You can't quantify that, which was why I just thought to myself, Arsenal should have gone for him, because apparently he was touted there.
Yeah.
Because of that diehard kind of...
Don't do this to me, Mark.
But never say die attitude is what I'm trying to say, nothing to do with diehard. And that, as I say, you can't quantify. You know, someone like Rashford will look up to him. There's no two ways about that. But just when I said his goal was a bit route one, I wasn't taking anything away from the goal. It was more from a Blackburn defending point of view, because that was the game that was lost on that goal.
I mean, defending was, it was late-ish in the game. Mm-hmm. Zlatan was fresh. Pogba can pick a pass out from anywhere on the pitch. And he timed his run perfectly, and the Blackburn Rovers players were just a little bit slow in playing the offside trap. I mean, and then they tried to get back and they couldn't get back. There was an amazing period of play towards the end of the game, resulting in like a Blackburn offside goal. But Sergio Romero made like three saves in a row, one he didn't know anything about. Mm. That was proper cup action, that one.
Yeah, that's frantic.
Great to see. I liked Conor Mahoney. It's the first time I've seen him play. I know he's like quite highly rated. He looked decent when he came on as well. But I thought it was a great game. I really enjoyed it.
It was. Mourinho said he'd field a strong 11. It wasn't their best 11, you would say. But it was certainly a strong 11, because he admits when he was Chelsea manager, he fielded a weaker 11, against Newcastle. Mm. That was because they had Barcelona in the Champions League and I think Liverpool in the
I remember that. That was when Chelsea ended the game with nine men because they had injuries and he made a lot of changes at once. Right.
They only lost 1-0.
Yeah, Clivert scored.
That's right.
I remember it. They knocked out Barcelona and Bayern Munich in the Champions League that season. They got beaten by Liverpool in the semi.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Mourinho said of his fellow foreign managers in England that not everyone studies and understand the culture of this country. And it's like a little slide dig at Klopp, maybe, because he fielded a weakened side in the cup.
Right.
And he's saying that some foreign managers, he was sort of insinuating that they might not quite get it, but...
He does like his nameless digs, doesn't he?
He does.
So he's basically saying, I've also done this.
Well, I think he's saying that...
He's learnt his lessons, maybe.
He's saying, I'm not really a foreigner to the land, I understand the culture more. Although, I mean, if they've not really applied themselves in the FA Cup, I mean, in the last 20 years, one Englishman has won the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Two British managers, if you include Sir Alex Ferguson. Redknapp was the English
manager. And before that, it would be
Royal.
Joe Royal in 95 for Everton. Yeah.
So okay. Foreign managers can't dislike the Cup that much because they tend to win it.
The problem with that, though, Mark, is you're applying facts to essentially a completely emotionally led argument. And there is no cause for that, especially not on this show.
Are you saying that is fake news?
It is fake news.
It's fake news.
It's unprovable. But Chelsea are going to play Manchester United, of course, in the next round, which will be an interesting one. Chelsea beat Wolves 2-0. We expected this, but then when George Saville had that chance early on, when he rattled the post, you thought, oh, that had got in. Yeah.
Chelsea are a bit of a steamroller, though, aren't they? You can't imagine them. Yeah. Even if they had scored that, I still think they would have won the game.
They didn't actually play that well, did they? They looked a little bit sluggish, but Pedro's goal, it was like the team play was so clinical. All it needs is for that machine to click into gear once.
Quietly going about their business.
Yeah. Indeed, yeah. The 30,000-odd crowd was the club's biggest since 1981, apparently.
Wow, that does surprise me.
Who says the cup is dead, Jim?
No, you keep saying it. No one else.
Marcus Speller says it.
I think I started last week's show by saying, I love the FA Cup, and I can't wait to get stuck into it.
Indeed.
You might find people who think the cup's dead, but not on this show, perhaps.
Not on this show. Yeah. All right, we're going to go and have a little bit of this before we talk about the Scottish Premiership.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
I think it was a nothing result. I'm Craig Brown. Welcome to the Football Ramble.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Don't forget, the preview show sponsored by Bet365 is out on Friday morning. We do have a new challenger in the hot seat. We need a new challenger.
Well, we'll have one, yeah. I'm sure I'll check the emails between now and Thursday night when we record and we'll find one. So if you fancy you've got what it takes, step up. James Holland's got the record so far with one correct bet.
it's a low bar.
It's easy until you get in the hot seat.
Absolutely. To the Scottish Premiership, Celtic's unbeaten domestic run was extended to 31 games on the weekend. In the league, they've played 25 matches all season and only dropped 2 points.
Yeah, they've been smashing it, haven't they?
They really have.
I know people always say, and we sort of joke about the quality of the SPL and blah, 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 blah.
It's the Scottish Premiership, not the SPL.
You disrespect it to such a point. I don't know the name of it.
It's Scotland, isn't it?
Yeah, and they're called Celtic Rangers.
Right.
You know Scotland, England's hat.
Shall I finish the point?
Go on.
I was going to say, but if any team can be that dominant in a league, they've clearly got something special.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. I mean, they've only dropped 2 points all season. Yes, you can say that the quality of the opposition they're coming up against is a lot more inferior, but you've still got to keep winning.
Yeah, you've got to get to that. You've got to get to that level where they are that inferior to you.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Although they only beat Motherwell 2-0. Whereas Aberdeen beat them 7-2 midweek.
Is it that sort of special sort of form and quality that means you get beat 7-0 by Barcelona in the Champions League? Because that happened. I mean, that's something that literally happened.
Yeah. Right. Maybe, well, maybe.
I suppose, yeah, I was about to say, come on, it's Barcelona, but then look at PSG.
Yeah, indeed. Well,
They weren't scared, were they?
God, imagine PSG playing Celtic.
It would be hundreds.
It would literally be 11-0. Are you going to talk about Mark McGee?
I was going to mention Mark McGee.
Excellent. May I?
Yes.
I saw a brilliant... I mean, obviously, Mark McGee, for those who haven't seen, was sent to the stands the other day against Aberdeen.
I think it was last week.
His team were beaten 7-2 by Aberdeen when he was sent to the stands. I saw a brilliant article today about Mark McGee apparently quite wanting an explanation about not only why he was sent to the stands against Aberdeen, but why so many refereeing decisions went against his team in that game and they lost 7-2. Now, I didn't see the game in its entirety, and I'm the first to admit that, but I've seen a decent amount of football matches in my time, and if you concede 7 goals in one game, it's rarely the fault of the referee. And it was fantastic because, I don't know if you guys know, but James McFadden is the assistant to McGee at Motherwell.
Yeah,
obviously, ex-Scottish striker, and plays for Everton and one or two others. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was worth mentioning. But speaking after the game, Mark McGee, according to the BBC, said he was absolutely disgusted and horrified by the attitude of the fourth official and wanted clarity. And asked if he would be speaking to the SFA's head of referees, John Fleming. McGee said, "John Fleming, I'll be speaking to a lawyer. I can only think there's an agenda." Now, if you watch the footage, Mark McGee is absolutely fuming.
He's one of the angriest men in Britain.
Yeah, it's like he tried to make out that he was really calm and all this. And the great quote afterwards was he said, he said, "I'm not being funny, but the fourth official spoilt the game for me."
Not your defending, not the Aberdeen forwards.
I'll just give you a bit more perspective. If you haven't got time to go and watch the video, I'll just leave with this. A police officer had to take him to the stand.
Wow. He's one of those men who's so angry that anybody with a sort of a rational mind wouldn't want to talk to him.
He also spotted a fan. When the policeman escorted him to the seat of the stands, he spotted a fan filming him and screamed at him, "Is that thing on? Get your fuck!"
That's such a wonderful Scottishism.
Oh, God. Anyway, Begbie in action.
Mark McGee is the gift that keeps on giving in that situation. It's fantastic to watch. Really, yeah. I just said to you, if you haven't got time to go and see it, fair enough, but please do treat yourself.
Yeah. Oh, dearie me. Mark Warburton has parted ways with Rangers.
Yeah.
A strange one.
Didn't Brendan Rodgers say... Brendan Rodgers, like, this is big of the week for Rodgers.
Yeah, this is big.
Well, the thing is, right, before you say it, we should caveat, but he didn't sort of mean it as a dig, and I'll come on to the wider point, but let's just take it in isolation.
Don't worry about the wider point. He said, Brendan Rodgers says, there isn't room for two successful managers in Glasgow.
Yeah, it's amazing. He and Warburton are friends, aren't they?
Yeah, they've
known each other a long
time.
Are,
yeah.
Right, okay.
But
makes it worse. Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Not room for two of us in this big city, baby.
No.
Well, because he said when he was in Liverpool when they finished second, reminding us of all that, Everton were doing quite well under Martinez. And that was okay in a city like Liverpool because both are having good seasons. But obviously they're not competing quite on the same level just yet. Whereas in Glasgow, I mean, it's the same in Glasgow, let's be honest. You know, Celtic and Rangers, the Rangers are not at that level at the moment and haven't been for goodness knows how long. But Rodgers is saying in Glasgow, with Celtic having such a blisteringly good time, Rangers can't stomach that, even though they could do with a bit more realism.
He could have just maintained a dignified silence.
He could have.
Not really his style, is it?
Oh, dear. Let's go to Ligue 1. Let's treat ourselves. There's free scoring Monaco, as they're now known. Were held, and PSG dropped points in Ligue 1. They dropped 2 points. So Nice won away 1-0, which was a big win for them because they're still in the hunt for the league title. They haven't won the championship in the top flight since 1959. They're just 3 points off the top. This is all the win away, I think it was against Lorient. This was despite Mario Balotelli getting his third red card of the season.
That's his three strikes now, isn't it? But isn't he still entitled to his good behaviour bonus? Or was that an old
contract?
No, that
was
Liverpool, I think.
He's not entitled to it because he's been sent off three times, surely.
No, but that was a different contract.
Oh.
I think that was at Liverpool.
I was brought in here under false pretenses.
Well, he was sent off for dissent as well. This is the thing, like, apparently the Nice manager's quite hot on this, as most managers are. He says, right, remember, no giving away penalties, no red cards, nothing stupid. When you're going for the league, I mean, you should do that anyway, but when you're going for the league and it's really tight, every game matters, every goal matters. Mm. Don't do stupid things. Don't derail it through nutty behaviour.
Yeah.
And Mario Balotelli got sent off, it was like 25, 30 minutes before the end of the game.
A dissent.
Yeah, exactly. For calling the referee something as he trotted away. It wasn't even a particularly big decision the referee made by letting the play go on when Balotelli thought he was fouled. It wasn't like it was a penalty in the last minute when it's 1-1 and it's very tense. And perhaps he was brought down and the referee didn't see it. But the referee said it after in his match report. He insulted me in English. I won't say more, but it was something classical.
Mm. It was something we've said a lot to our
listeners. If it's a French referee, then Balotelli's got to use his head there. Insult him in Italian. He's far less likely to be able to speak Italian than he is English.
Just don't insult him.
Or maintain a dignified silence.
Yeah.
Once again.
Not really his style.
The Brendan Rodgers.
Oh, dear.
It's a three-horse race in France now, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
You know, PSG and Monaco both being above Nice, it looks tough for them now.
Well, Nice are on the same points as PSG now. I mean, Nice, it would be remarkable if they won it, but Monaco...
They're doing a great job, aren't they?
The top scorers in Europe in all competitions, 107 goals in all competitions, 76 goals in 26 league matches, 26 or 27 more than the second best scorers in the league, PSG.
That's amazing.
They are free scorers.
Well, obviously, they've got Falcao, they've got Bernardo Silva, and they've got, like, João Moutinho as well. But a lot of these players that have come through Monaco's own youth system. Because do you remember, three or four seasons ago now, they said, we're going to stop spending stupid money on people.
Yeah, and they have done.
And they did do that. And they just, you know,
it's been remarkable.
Their academy again, which is how they've always kind of operated.
Yeah. Germain up front, I think that's how you pronounce it. Mbappe's been brilliant as well. The manager, Jardim, Portuguese manager. He's done wonders there. He could emerge as one of the most sought after managers on the planet. Well,
he probably will be, because I've seen Monaco play in the Champions League a couple of times this season, and I was impressed with them. And they go to the Etihad on Tuesday night for the first leg of the Man City Champions League Round of 16 game.
Underrated thigh rubber, that.
I think Monaco have got a real chance in this.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
I really do.
To the point of some people, more the hipsters, would have them down perhaps as even favourites. The way Man City are playing, the way Monaco are playing, you know, it's not ridiculous. Monaco have already beaten Spurs in the Champions League and dumped them out of the competition effectively. So it will be an interesting one, with City looking ropey at the back. They just score goals for fun most of the time.
Imagine Falcao coming back to Manchester to do all the damage there.
Indeed, he's been much better up front. And they play, it will be a variation, of course, but it's pretty much like a 4-4-2 they play. So it will be quite interesting to see. Before we go to the highlights of the week, we go to the Far East. This is quite nice, from Hong Kong. Chang Yung-ting, the head coach of Hong Kong's Eastern Sports Club, will become the first woman to coach a men's side in a continental competition when they face Big Phil Scolari's Wangzhou Evergrande in the Asian Champions League this week.
Excellent to see, yeah.
She's
great.
Only 28 as well.
That's amazing. Now he's speaking my language.
Yeah,
that's good.
she led the Eastern Sports Club to the Hong Kong Premier League title this year. Is that Pete's out there at the moment. Mm. This story's emerged. Is he trying to get an assistant job, or is he trying to get... I don't know what he's doing.
If he's involved, she'll be sacked very soon. I'll ruin it for her.
I'll let you in behind the curtain. Marcus said, we're going to do a bit on Hong Kong tonight, because Pete's out there. We're going to link it in somehow.
Well, no, that story is worth there.
We can, but ask him when he gets back.
Yeah, maybe he's reporting on the story.
Yeah, to be fair to him, when he went to Japan a couple of times, he did go to a Japanese football match.
It wouldn't surprise me if Pete was the owner of that football club.
No, nothing would surprise me.
Mm, indeed, yeah. And while we're in the Far
Pete,
East...
if you're listening, get in touch.
Yeah. Let us know how you're getting on. Let's go quickly to Vietnam.
I was going to do this on the highlights of the week, Spelzy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, let's go to the highlights of the week with Luke Moore.
I don't want to cut you off there, purely because I don't want to steal all the listeners' thunder, because a lot of them got in touch with it.
Yeah.
I want them to...
I've announced the highlights of the week. We're in your bit.
Great. OK. In which case, pipe down. I've got a few before we move into the listener-contributed ones. One is that the terrible news that Crystals is shutting down and moving... Well, hang on. I'll give you all the information. Crystals, I knew this would be big news. Crystals is shutting down from Sellers Park because there's a redevelopment going on there and moving to New Cross. So the last night at the official venue is Saturday 13th of May. So make your moves now, people. I'm speaking to people in this room and outside this room.
Hong Kong.
Yeah, make your moves now. And I've also realised that Sutton's big unit in goal, Wayne Shaw, the second choice keeper, he used to play for my hometown club, Gosport Borough. I was trying to work out if I saw him play or not, but I don't think I did.
I'm trying to work out to see if I could play at that level.
Possibly. It's still time for me because I think he's 43 now.
So,
I'm only 36, so you never know.
There you are.
Right. What have we got here? Joe Lowe, the pleasingly named Joe Lowe, says, at Dulwich Hamlet, I saw a man drinking Merlot straight from the bottle this weekend.
At Dulwich Hamlet, are they not quite the hipster lot?
Very middle class.
They, apparently, I know a few people that go over there, obviously. And apparently, a lot of them don't want to get promoted because you can't drink at the ground.
I live 10-15 minute walk from their ground, and it's very, very fashionable non-league club these days. It's the club that all those against modern football fans started going to watch originally because they don't like professional football anymore or something like that.
Oh, right. I think the drinking thing would be just on the in the stands.
Okay, right.
Because there's a fine craft beer selection there, apparently. Okay. Obviously, again.
Okay. And next up is Peter Blow. Joe Lowe and Peter Blow. I don't think they're related. It wouldn't make any sense if they were. Different names. Yeah. Jose applauding the Blackburn goal, something you touched on, Marcus. I'm sure it was some kind of mind game or dig at the FA, but I can't fathom what, so I'll just assume he enjoyed the goal.
Yeah.
And it has been fined.
That's a fair point from Mr. Blow there.
Ben Stanley, my heart of the weekend was realising that even Matt Reed's teammates must be scared witless of the man, since clearly nobody has taken him to one side and had a word about the hair issue.
There's a decision to be made.
Ben Stanley, if Matt Reed's listening, you are now public enemy number one. That's Ben Stanley. This is quite nice. This slipped under the radar. I didn't see it this week. I'm a fan of the show generally, but I didn't watch it this weekend. Neil Warnock, apparently, according to Don Booth,
was
speaking to Cammy and Ben Shepherd on Goals on Sunday, saying he wanted a minute's booing when he dies because of all the clubs who dislike him. It's quite funny.
I did find that
amusing. I've got a lot of time for Neil Warnock. Yeah, I think he's all right. Yeah. And this is one for you particularly, Jim, but for those who are listening, we're recording this before the Arsenal-Sutton game tonight, so obviously we can't cover that. But Calvin Palmer got in touch on Twitter, and I'm not making this up, Calvin Palmer 16 on Twitter, he replied to us on Twitter today just simply saying, Arsenal will put 7 past this slot tonight, and you can take that to the bank.
What have you done?
Forgive him, Father, for he knows not what he says.
Could be right.
And finally, before I rudely cut Marcus off, this is the reason why a lot of listeners got involved with this. Ho Chi Minh City players refused to continue playing in a Vietnam League match on Sunday after the referee awarded a late penalty to their opponents, Long An. After the penalty made the score 3-2 and effectively decided the result, Ho Chi Minh players were so incensed with the decision that they decided to stop playing, letting Long An score 2 further goals unchallenged to make the score 5-2. Now, if you haven't seen this...
Oh, it's class.
There's a video doing around the internet. You've got to watch it. It's bafflingly entertaining.
Yeah, well, the penalty they let them score.
That's... Yeah, Luke and I were talking about this earlier, and how strange that is. Because, as you said...
To bring people up to speed, it was 2-2. It's quite near the end of the game from what I can make out.
Last minute.
Yeah, it was last minute. Okay, they get... Ho Chi Minh City have a you would probably say a questionable penalty against, but not outrageous.
Yeah,
It was coming together in the box. It's one of those ones that pundits will say, in quotes, you've seen them given.
Yep. Right?
It's given.
Yep.
Rather than trying to save the penalty, the goalkeeper turns his back on the penalty taker and lets him score.
Yeah.
Well, for me, there is a time and a place to protest. Protest after that.
Yeah.
At least
try
and save it.
Yeah, right.
Then there's no harm done.
That's right.
The fourth one is my favourite, though, because the striker's bearing down and none of the opposition defenders are trying to stop him, and the goalkeeper does a roly-poly
in his
and then just walks off.
Do you think that was was that in homage to Wayne Shaw, the roly-poly?
Yeah, maybe.
Don't disrespect him.
I'm just saying that's his name.
The fifth one as well, he does basically the same thing without the roly-poly. Just walks past him. Just lets him go. So strange.
Very odd. So thanks to all the listeners who got in touch with that. I would name you all, but there are far too many to mention.
There was another great one from Mexico. A guy called Peter Timms on Twitter pointed this out to us as well.
Oh, I like this one.
The Mexican manager called Ricardo La Vulpa, which he also pointed out means Richard the Fox. So we should perhaps expect this.
Very good.
Basically, as a player, like running down the line, and the ball looks like it's about to go out of touch, doesn't, Big Ricardo doesn't matter. Like, he's not bothered about this because he just steps onto the pitch and tackles him. Yeah. Like, still in play, and the manager's just, I'm having that off you.
I'd like to add that it was a great tackle from a man with his hands in his pockets in dress shoes.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, but is it quite straightforward to tackle someone when that person has no idea that you can even legitimately tackle them?
Well, maybe.
Yeah, true. He's got the, I'll agree, he's got the weapon of surprise on his side.
Yeah. Well, I have a highlight as well, and it's in the same vein as what's been going on. There's been a few good ones. The Argentina under 20 coach Gerardo Solorio, who's he's been suspended, and I'll tell you why. He was trying to climb a perimeter fencing to fight fans at 57 years old,
under 20 coach.
Happening here? Anyone caring that much? Yeah. Right, okay. Is he the new under 21 boss, AD Boothroyd?
I'm not sure. I can't remember.
I think he's certainly naming the hat, but I'm not. I think he may have got the job. Imagine someone. I mean, Boothroyd's definitely managed at that level. Imagine maybe Big AD going, right, I'm not having that.
I'm coming to get you.
The Mark McGee gets
He's definitely involved in the setup at England, Boothroyd. Yeah.
Mark McGee gets sent to the stands, right?
Yeah, and rightly so.
And a fan is filming him, and McGee turns round, and you could imagine, because he's an angry man anyway, I mean, in the heat of the moment, he's going, oi, are you going to turn that effing thing off, or whatever he says, right? That's like quite outrageous for here. The Argentina national team under 21 coach is trying to climb a perimeter fence to fight fans.
I thought you said it was under 20, so it's not as bad.
Under 20, yeah.
Is that fence there to keep the coaches out?
I don't know. But the quote, Jim, I have to say this, people call me old, a drunk, but I just climbed the fence to look for the haters. It goes on.
It's like Flo Rida.
Sometimes.
He's Drake.
I get a good feeling. Yeah. I've said 1,000 sorries, but I'm feeling like Jesus, to be honest. Everyone at me for no reason.
Again, like, how is there even this much criticism of the under-20 coach to play?
Who cares that much? Imagine making his boss. Life hell.
Imagine his boss, right, you're going to go out there, you're going to say something to the press about this. Sorry, I was just going to get off of the haters. Not that. Don't say that.
All right, well, I'm feeling like Jesus for crying. I don't.
Jesus, who famously climbed many fences to get at the haters.
Blessed are the peacemakers. Yeah. And if you disagree with that, I'll punch your noses. Yeah.
What's his name, this guy?
It's Gerardo Solorio.
Just making a note.
Yeah.
He might pop up again.
Well, he's not going to be in a job, surely. Oh, mind you never know with the Argentinian FA.
Yeah.
He might be given a 3-year extension. We love your passion.
Mm. You can manage the national team.
Right, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble this week. It's been an absolute pleasure. Any more for any more chaps? Are we out?
No, you've already said it's the end of the show, so don't ask us now.
That's it. Okay, it's goodbye from me. Goodbye from you, Jim.
No hidden tracks for us.
Goodbye from Luke Moore.
Goodbye.
See you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
and Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman, I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.